This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Tully Blanchard Enterprises, along with Arn Anderson, the World TV Champion. Of course, Tully, the National Heavyweight Champion. And here's the team, pretty formidable team, I would think.
Your ratings have just taken a phenomenal jump in the last 10 seconds.
You know, I tell you, Tony Schiavone, it was hard-pressed to look for somebody that was as good as the Three Horsemen to be my partner. I tell you what, Flair, we decided he goes on, defends that world title, take Dustin Rhodes down for the last time, New Orleans, Louisiana. Four seeds, should be number one. The remaining two are the Four Horsemen, Arn Anderson, Double A, and Tully Blanchard, the National Heavyweight Champion.
What two athletes are better conditioned than us, more experienced than us? Two champions combined, Tony Giovanni, are going to be unbeatable. If you want to seed us 24th, do it. We'll beat six teams, eight teams, or every team if we have to win $1 million, because we got expensive habits.
I got news for you. If you think that we can't go out on $1 million in New Orleans and have...
Hey.
Oh, my goodness. Baby doll is here with us at ringside.
You know, I have a couple of words for all of you. And Arn Anderson, I'm going to start by you. You never beat Dusty Rhodes for the title, and you know it. Tully Blanchard, we all know how you won the title. I'm not going to embarrass everyone by telling you what kind of man you are. And J.J. Dillon, huh? On my worst day, darling, I could knock you into tomorrow. And since you're talking about ratings, about how many people watch us, I am challenging you right now.
She has challenged J.J. Dillon, right?
You're challenging me!
Just calm down. You're not going to go on national TV and embarrass Dustin Rhodes and baby doll. James, just
Tony Schiavone, that woman will do anything to get a little affection. Any way she can to get somebody to hug her.
I think James is going to go in.
J.J. Dillon is going up against baby doll. The challenge has been made. Oh, my. I can't begin to imagine what we're in for. I can't begin to imagine it all. Oh, here's America's team. It's Dusty and Magnum. And they're all in the ring. Oh, Magnum in with Arn Anderson as Tully takes the shoe. Magnum, sunset flip. And Tully comes in for a save. Both men with Magnum up. Dusty and Magnum both have him down. Blanchard over the top rope. Belly to belly. And now Rhodes up on the turnbuckle. They have that right leg of Arn Anderson. They have the leg of Arn. Oh! Payback has come to Arn Anderson. They have him again. J.J. trying to drag Arn Anderson away. Still, they're pulling on him. And look at Magnum. Now they're going for the leg of Blanchard. Arn Anderson is hobbling off the best he can. And there goes Blanchard and Dillon. Coming in to clean house. Now, once again, a good look at America's team standing there.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, welcome back to another episode of NWA Crock and Roll. I am your host, not Sean Kidd this episode, but Callum McDougall. Sean is currently on assignment tonight. He is part of the delegation that we've sent out to Sydney, Australia to go over the bid for the 1987 Crockett Cup. We're starting early. So he's looking over their bid. He'll be back in a couple of weeks. He's doing some world travelling, but he'll be back in a couple of episodes' time. But you still do have the other three horsemen to guide you through the back end of March 1986 and what an episode we've got coming up for that. So introducing first co-host, Dr. G. Dr. G, how you doing?
Hey, good evening. Thanks for subbing for Sean tonight. I think you'll do a great job, but I heard something that he was spotted in a airport in Huntsville, Alabama, meeting with some guy with a beard, big guy.
Oh, we'll need to do some investigating on that. We need to get the somebody on location there.
We need to send our crack team out there to see what's going on.
Here's me thinking that he's, I'm taking him at his word that he's away to Sydney to look over the Crockett Cup bid, but it sounds as if he might be jumping ship, so we need to keep a close eye on that one.
We miss you, Sean.
Yes, Sean, you will be missed. Thank you for laying everything. I must say, off the bat, thank you for laying everything on a plate for me just only having to take notes. Sean has still done all the hard work that we know and love him for behind the scenes here. So thank you very much for that, Sean. But I think we'll get some intel from the third horseman of the group. No longer the Paul Roma, he's stepped up. He's now the Barry Windham of the group. Scott Shiflett. Scott, how are you doing?
Thank you so much for calling me the Barry Windham of the group. That just warms my heart, Callum. Glad to be here tonight. March of 86, I think this is this is going to be our third and fourth episodes of March of 86, but so much is packed into these episodes and our previous episodes. It's March of 86 might be one of the craziest months in all of wrestling. It feels like just so much is going on. We were talking about it before the air, and I can't wait to talk about it tonight, because if there's any type of wrestling that you like, it's basically covered here. And Crockett is just on fire, as we've seen from the crowds just losing their mind over everything, which we'll get to in our second episode. But I'm loving what I'm watching so far. I wish I could be like, 32-year-old Scott back then in 1986, able to see like Crockett and Greensboro and everything weekly, because it was a sight to behold.
Oh yeah, completely agree. It's refreshing getting to watch it all for the first time as it was shown, sort of like episodic and not picking bits here and there. It's excellent. And as Scott said, we've got some stacked couple episodes coming up. So you've got between this one and the episode that you'll hear in the in a couple of weeks' time, we're finishing off the end of, we'll take us up to the 29th of March 1986. We've got we'll be looking at matches from an absolutely stacked Greensboro House show. We've got two title matches from television. We've got a whole host of Crockett Cup build up as well. So a lot to take in, and it's been an absolute joy to go over it. And I hope it's an absolute joy for everyone to hear our thoughts on it. So, gentlemen, will we dive right in?
Yes, sir.
Alrighty, so we will start off with the March 15th episode of World Championship Wrestling. But before we do that, the champions roll call as of the 15th of March. As ever, your NWA World Heavyweight Champion is the Nature Boy Ric Flair. US Champion is Magnum TA. National Heavyweight Champion is Tully Blanchard. World TV Champion is, of course, Arn Anderson. Denny Brown is still your World Junior Heavyweight Champion. Midnight Express still your Tag Team Champions. Sam Houston is the Mid-Atlantic Champion. And your World Six-Man Tag Team Champions are still the Russian Team. So the first thing that we look at the on March 15th, Saturday night, is a press conference for the Crockett Cup. So it starts off with a lovely shot of the cup and a tribute to Jim Crockett Sr. And they announce once again the host city is New Orleans and it will be held in the Silver Dome, brother. Of course, that is the New Orleans, the current Caesars Superdome. Jim Crockett's wife pans into her. She's sitting next to a picture of Jim Crockett Sr. She's sitting like she's the queen doing her Christmas address. But she says she hopes that next year will be in Charlotte, so make that two Crocketts that are bitter about the venue of choice after David last month. We get words from Bob Johnson, the EVP of the Superdome, who's clearly not interested and not doing much to hide the fact that he's reading from a teleprompter, but he's happy that the Crockett Cup is coming to the Superdome. And a Todd Gordon lookalike gives us ticket information before Bill Apter, as a representative of PWI, will have the honour of the seeding of the tournament, which I think is an absolutely excellent touch. And if you've heard the previous episodes, you know I am a sucker for the small extra bits that they're doing for us. So your top 10 seeds are the Road Warriors, and from 1 to 10, Road Warriors, America's Team, Midnight Express, and Ric Flair and Arn Anderson, all representing Jim Crockett Promotions. Rick Martel and Schiff's favourite, Dino Bravo, representing Lutte Internationale in Quebec, otherwise known as International Wrestling. JCP's Rock and Roll Express, Tiger Mask and Giant Baba represent all Japan. The Russians representing JCP and the USSR. The Sheepherders and Ted DiBiase and Steve Williams from Mid-South. We get some rare kind words from Bill Watts, who bigs up Mid-South tradition at the Superdome, and he says he wants to have the Superdome be the site of an NWA World's Heavyweight title change, and he's convinced Ric Flair to pull out the tournament to defend the title, which I thought he'd have been courteous enough to tell Bill Apter beforehand, but there you go. He bigs up the challenger, who turns out to be the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. Bill Apter comes back to the podium and says that Tully has Arn has chosen Tully to replace Ric Flair, and Magnum has chosen Ronnie Garvin to be his to be Dusty Rhodes' replacement. So a lot to take in there, but I do think it gets the point across. Don't understand why they put Flair and Arn as a team, then only to announce the world title match. It seems like a long way for a shortcut there, but. Again, I just thought it's a nice addition, a couple of minutes here to big up the tournament as a legitimate sporting event. So, you know, a gimmick I think they should bring back, and I thought it was quite good. So I'll go to Scott first. What were your thoughts on this one?
Oh man, like we could have done without. You know, it seemed like Miss Crockett and the same, like, you know, with the other Crockett was like bitter that their own company that they own somehow was not going to be in Charlotte, but in Louisiana. It's like they were trying to be like heels in this situation, which I thought was odd. And like it was showing all these people with their most monotone voice saying how excited they were for the Superdome to hold the Crockett Cup. It's like, come on, like at least show some enthusiasm. But one thing I did like, and you brought this up, was how they had those seedings and they read off the seedings. That was cool. But then with them saying like, oh, late breaking news, when it's like at the same, I wish they would have like intercepted that, like had a cut in or something where it's like breaking news. Like, you know, I could have seen WWE doing this a whole lot better at the time, like having Sean Mooney's like, our sources are telling us that Ric Flair will be facing off with Dusty Rhodes and Magnum and Tully's taking over for Rick and Ronnie Garvin has taken over for Dusty, like something like that, instead of like, oh, like we're passing notes to each other in high school, which the NWA was trying, like making it seem like they were doing. And like you said, it made the guy from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, I'm blanking on his name right now, I can see him, look like a total doofus as he just read off the top 10. But I do love the top 10 seeding. And this is a 24 tag team tournament. That is awesome. I wish they would. I know the current NWA is doing something like this with the Crockett Cup. It's actually going to be in Nashville in March. But it was awesome just hearing all these seedings, and the tag teams are stacked. I love that they were able to pull in, you know, quote unquote, the forbidden door was open in 1986, bringing in like all this talent. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited for it. The first half of the presentation was lacking, but the second half was great.
Oh yeah, I agree with everything. I agree with everything you said. And yeah, Bill Apter did look like a bit of a putz. But yeah, it was I agree with everything you said. Dr. G, what are your thoughts on it?
You know, Scott, I agree. Well, with both of you guys. I mean, I just the thing about watching that now, I guess because watching it through different eyes, it almost was uncomfortable watching it. Like it just seemed like They were like deer in headlights when they got up and spoke. The EVP of the Superdome could care less if he was there. It was lucky, you know, what the event was. And, yeah, it just seemed disjointed. Okay, we're going to announce all these teams, and then, wait a second, we got some news, breaking news. You know, like, it was just, I don't know, it was just weird. Why even do that? Why even announce that? Like, let come out with that news first, and then announce the teams. But I don't know. I just, it just showed you that how at times the NWA just didn't have their act together. It just, they wanted to be big time, but every time they tried to do something big time, they made it look low rent. And that's basically what I got from it. I like the press conference idea. I love the Scott, like you said, with the seating of the teams. Yes, the current NWA is doing it. I don't think they're going to have as many teams, but I like the concept of it. I'm not a big tournament guy. I like them every once in a while, like something really big, something like this. I feel like the current NWA does too much of this stuff, but I think that this concept was really good. And I think if Crockett had stayed in business, you know, it would have went on for many, many years.
Yeah, I totally get your point there. It was a good idea in theory, but the execution could have been.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Watts is like, oh gosh, he's horrible. He's even horrible on his TV show. I mean, he's just so dull. You know, the Crockett's really whenever, I mean, David's the only one that really was, you know, and I know he gets ripped a lot, but at least he was entertaining and he had some personality on the mic. But the rest of them, they were just not good. But Bill Apter, I mean, it's cool having Pro Wrestling Illustrated. That was the magazine I read when I was growing up. So that was kind of cool having them mixed in with it. So it was a lot of cool features. Again, just exactly, that's the perfect statement, Callum. It's the execution was not good.
Yeah, and there's just a thing that I've just thought of there. It's like I've been to these sort of events before. Not a press conference, but something that's obviously got an agenda of some description. And you don't just turn up and it starts when everyone gets in. Everyone's obviously mingling. Bill Watts, I could understand if it's Bill Watts, right enough. But you're not telling me that Bill Watts couldn't have taken Bill up to the side and gone, there's been a bit of a change of plan, as opposed to making him go up and do all that. But a fine idea let down by the execution. What is never let down by execution, though, is any match involving Arn Anderson, and that is what we are going on to next. First championship match of the episode, it's Arn Anderson defending the World's Television Championship against Mike Jackson. So doing a bit of research on Mike Jackson, he just floats around the territories. He's popped up here and there in Florida and Continental and I think even a bit of Alabama what's the guy's name? Is it Robert Fuller? Is it
the Robert Fuller's Fuller? Alabama? Yeah.
So Memphis, Alabama. He's popped up there. Dr. G, do you have any recollection of Mike Jackson popping up in Florida from when you were watching?
I do. He wrestled, you know, like in a lot of the, you know, the jobber matches, always, you know, put on a pretty good show, just like he always did. And good, as we would say, good hand in the ring. But yes, though, I do remember Mike Jackson showing up. You know, it was so funny when you were younger and you were like, oh, my gosh, these guys are, you know, like you would see Dusty. He was in all these storylines in Carolina and then, or, you know, like for the Crockett. And then all of a sudden you see him on Florida and he's in all these storylines. It was like, you know, you when you're a kid, you're trying to figure out what the heck's going on. How is he in all these different feuds? And, you know, but I do remember Mike Jackson. He always, I think a lot of the big stars liked working with him. And that's why you see that he was able to get maybe more moves in. You know, they always made him seem bigger, you know, like that he was like on the edge of being like a great wrestler. So mm-hmm. when he did get beat, it was like a great feat for the star to beat him. They would do that once in a while with some of the guys like Iron Mike Sharp in the WWF. You know, they would make like he was this big tough guy that, you know, he's a tough customer. You know how Gorilla Monsoon would always pump it up. You know, that's basically how like Mike Jackson. But Mike Jackson could really go in the ring, though. I mean, he's very well trained. I think he trains wrestlers today.
It wouldn't surprise me if I'm honest. If he was teaching me, I certainly wouldn't be disappointed after watching this one. So we'll get into it. So the match starts off. Arn is in the ring. He's jawjacking about Dusty's whereabouts before the match, and hands off the belt to someone at ringside who may or may not have been Teddy Long. I don't know if either of you caught it.
That was definitely Teddy Long.
I thought it was. It was one of those ones that I looked back a couple of times, and I thought it was Teddy Long, and I knew he'd get in. He sort of started up doing that sort of stuff. So first sighting of Teddy Long on the podcast was all. Arn starts off by toying with Jackson, offering him a chance to leave the ring, and Arn is carrying himself like an absolute superstar as usual. Jackson stuns Arn with a lovely head scissors, which takes him out the ring, and the crowd are immediately on Anderson's back. But it sounded as if they were actually chanting for the referee, which was a bit strange. I couldn't make it out, but it sounded as if they were going, "Tell him, Pee-wee, tell him." I'm happy to be corrected on that, but that's how it came across to me anyway. Jackson slows it down with a couple of headlocks, but the crowd is eating everything up. And Jackson, I've got a note here that Jackson's given quite the performance and not the jobber fest that I'd anticipated, which goes to Dr. G's point earlier that the stars are happy to give him a bit more than they normally would. Jackson then gets a one count off a quick small package, but Arn rolls out to gather himself, and he's not happy and seems to be at a loss of what's happening in the match, because he's not really got the better of Jackson at this point, and the crowd is getting really behind Jackson at this point, and they are sort of, they're getting to their peak loudness as they normally do on the Saturday night shows. Arn takes back over with a big right hand and a face rake against the ropes, and then it's just excellent general Arn beatdown stuff. Jackson tries a comeback, but it's cut short as he doesn't quite get all the way over Arn on a leapfrog and ends up face planting in a nasty bit of mistiming. Jackson is rallying and has Arn on the rope before Arn counters the running clothesline with an elbow and then hits a sick godbuster for the three in what I thought was a really, really good match. Jackson really impressed me without overshadowing Arn, and Arn gave Jackson enough to make him look like enough of a threat that the crowd got really behind him, but not at the expense of himself. So I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was really, really good. I've actually gone 2.75 stars on this one. Dr. G, what are your thoughts?
I agree with you. I went with 2.75 stars on this as well. I really enjoyed this, and I really enjoy watching Mike Jackson, not like just getting to the point where, you know, oh my gosh, could Arn actually lose this match, but making Arn look good in the process. And I know Arn has spoken about him very highly, that, you know, Mike Jackson was one of those guys that he didn't mind, you know, because a lot of times it was just a total squash match, but this was one guy he enjoyed working with and actually learned some things from, because Mike Jackson could go. And, you know, again, it was one of those, and the crowd was hot, you know, that small crowd in that studio was really into this match, because Arn was so hated that they would have loved to have seen Mike Jackson. And Mike Jackson was one of those guys, those jobber guys that really had a good following. You know, I guess Pez Watley did too before, you know, as we'll get into more of him, but you know, he had a pretty good, following too in, during this time, but Mike Jackson definitely, the crowd wanted to see him beat Arn, but again, people hated Arn so much. So I really enjoyed the psychology, the back and forth, and the nice way that Mike Jackson, you know, did the job. And, you know, even though he still made Arn look good.
Yeah, Jackson was really good. It was almost as if by Jackson looking as good as he was, it made Arn look even better because he actually got to, he actually did pull out the win at that point. So both guys were excellent in this one. So two lots of 2.75. Scott, what are your thoughts?
I'm going to lead off the top here. It's crazy how in sync we are. I have 2.75 as well.
Oh, there we go.
I was shocked. Like, my first note was Mike Jack. I'm not meaning this to be derogatory. It's just what I thought of. Mike Jackson looks like a mechanic. That was my first thought.
I mean, he looked older even back then. And
yeah,
I don't think he was that old at that time, but he just, but so did Arn. You know, Arn looks the same now as he did then. So
yeah, but I was just like, I'm pretty sure I dropped my car off at this dude's mechanic shop before. That was like my first thought.
Good.
I had the same thing about the head scissors from Jackson. That was a really nice head scissors, and it caught me by surprise. I thought this was going to be just a squash match. The crowd was, and thank you, Callum, because I couldn't figure out what the crowd was chanting either. I actually had that note down. And like, they actually had like another spot where there's a leapfrog from Arn, and then Jackson surprised him with a dropkick, which I thought was really nice. And Arn actually got out of the ring right there, and you could see that he was worried. And the crowd was just loving everything Mike was doing. And I will say, the Gourd Buster, I want someone to bring that back. Brock Anderson should bring that back, because that move just looks so vicious. And you know, like, he's down for the count when that happens. All these years, I thought Arn's move was like the Spine Buster, which he does great, and the DDT. But holy crap, that Gourd Buster, like, you know it's over. It's like he could just like put a pinky on the guy and it'll be 1, 2, 3. But Arn just looks so vicious. The Four Horsemen are just, you know, a Minnesota wrecking crew, as they say. But it's, I just can't get enough of. And since, like, you know, I did like the guest spots before I officially joined, he's just been a revelation. Like, I knew Arn was good, but I didn't know he was this good. And this is great to see.
Scott, I watched him growing up, but I didn't give him the respect. Going back and watching this, I'm like, wow. I mean, he's, you know, top five, top 10 in the, you know, in the, you know, the GWCW guys from 81 to 2001. Because, and I don't think if you would have asked me this five, 6 years ago, whatever, 2 years ago, I probably wouldn't have had him that high. But wow, he was phenomenal. He should have been a world champion. It's kind of a shame.
I agree. At least U.S. champion, not just, you know, like the TB champ, he was like the standard bearer for that, but he could have at least been like a U.S. champ, or maybe, you know, because I just saw something on Twitter where he just lays out Vader with the Spine Buster. And maybe,
oh, I saw that one, yeah.
Maybe if they had like the year, like the monthly pay-per-views, he could have got a title shot, but they only had like, you know, it was like, you know, 4, then 6. And when they got to 12, it was at the tail end of his career. And by that point, Hogan had came in and made WCW revolve around him. It's another podcast for another time, but it just feels like he was just missing those moments. And
agree.
The powers that be just thought he was a good hand, sadly.
I remember hearing that, and this statistic shocked me, but I remember hearing on his pod one time that he only ever had one world title shot, and it was Barry Windham at Slamboree. Was it Slamboree 93? But it was the NWA title, but it wasn't the NWA title.
The WCW International title.
Yes. And that's the only world championship match he ever had in his career, which I think is. But when you think about it, it's not. Because Flair had it for a lot of the time where he would have been one of the top guys. But then when Flair loses it to Dusty, as you said, Scott, if they had the 12 pay-per-views a year, Dusty's first challenger could be easily. But for him to only have, for the career that he's had, for him to only have ever one title shot is ridiculous.
And we're even seeing now where they could have like just went back on this history where Arn's like, I took the TV title from you, I'm going to take the world title from you now. Boom. Simple.
Easy. And yeah.
It's just frustrating.
Yeah, but as you say, another pod for another day, and I'm sure, well, since Scott isn't here, since Sean isn't here, sorry, Scott, you're definitely here, since Sean isn't here, I say that one of the times that Sean isn't here, we'll just have an Arn Anderson appreciation pod.
I like that.
No problem for me.
But before we move on, gents, we have just raved about Mike Jackson for a long time there. Would it surprise you if I told you that he was on national television in March 2020?
Are you serious?
Mike Jackson, on the 14th of April 2020 edition of Impact, lost to Johnny Swinger.
Oh, I kind of remember this, that but he did make a match, because I know he's a trainer, but I do kind of remember this now.
Yeah. The last taping before the pandemic, he was on, I remember seeing the spot on Twitter. He goes up to do like the old school, but walks along all four sides of the ring. It was quite something. He also teamed with Johnny Swinger to defeat Cardaniel Dunn and Chris Sabin at Impact Throwback Throwdown 2 on the 18th of December 2021. So he might show up on Impact this year. He has done for the last 2 years.
Oh, that would be awesome.
He still looks good. Looks good. Looks better now than he did back then. He's clearly given up the being a mechanic.
Yes, I just looked up a picture of him. He actually has aged pretty well, you know, because not that many 80s wrestlers made it out. So it's nice to see that.
He's made it out, and he's made it out well. Okay, so we will move on from the. I think when in addition to the Arn Anderson appreciation pod, we'll have a Mike Jackson appreciation pod as well. but before we get bogged down on that, we've got a run of promos here involving a who's who of Jim Crockett Promotions. We start off with Dusty Rhodes. Now, if you remember from the last episode, we almost had an incident involving Dusty Rhodes and exposing himself. He did start stripping off before a wonderfully timed cut to commercial. So Dusty starts off at the podium apologising for stripping off last week, but he promises that if getting into his birthday suit will get attention, then that's what he'll do. He warns Arn Anderson that the fans have told him that his leg will be broken before this whole issue is all said and done. And he then turns his attention to Tully, who's walking around with his National Heavyweight Championship. Arn is also rocking around with his World Television Championship. But the one thing they don't have is his woman. And of course, he's talking about Baby Doll. Dusty turns his attention then to Flair. So he's firing on all cylinders in this one. He tells Tully to tell Flair that he has a date with Destiny at the Superdome, and if he doesn't think he'll make it there, then he'll be quite happy facing somebody else. He closes off by saying that this is going to be his biggest year, and if it takes him to be butt naked to get what he wants, then that's what he'll do. So twice there, we have been threatened with Dusty Rhodes in his birthday suit. JJ and Arn and Tully come out to the podium a bit later on to fire back at Dusty, and he says the ratings have immediately jumped up in the 10 seconds that the Horsemen have been out before Arn and Tully start complaining about their seeding of the Crockett Cup, which they think should be number one. Arn says they don't care if they have to go through six teams, eight teams, or every team, they will do anything for $1 million, to which Tully asks if they know how much of a good time the Horsemen could have in New Orleans with $1 million. I think we all know the answer to that one. Baby Doll then comes out. She's a few words for everyone. To Arn, she says, "You'll never beat Dusty Rhodes for the title, and you know it." To Tully, she says, "We all know how you won that title, and I won't embarrass you by telling everyone what kind of man you are." And to JJ, "On my worst day, I could knock you into tomorrow, and since you talk about the ratings, how many people are watching, I'm challenging you right now." JJ then starts to do his best Ric Flair impression by undressing, whilst Arn and Tully try to talk him down. America's team then come out to fight Arn and Tully off, and a brawl breaks out. Magnum hits a sunset flip and the ref counts. So not quite sure what's happening there. It seems like a match is broken out. Don't worry, guys, I won't ask you to rate it. Magnum hits the belly to belly and then holds Arn's foot down to allow Dusty to come off the rope to stomp on the ankle of Arn. Very reminiscent of how the Horseman broke Dusty's ankle. Tully comes off the top and Magnum hits a sort of belly to belly on his way down, but doesn't quite come off. And Dusty stomps on Tully's ankle, so we are going down the payback as a bitch route for these four guys. JJ ushers Tully away as America's team and Baby Doll stand tall to close out that segment. Tully, Arn and JJ come back a wee bit later in the show once again. JJ goes on an almighty rant against Baby Doll, saying she's jealous of JJ because now he has the gold and he has the gold that she used to have. He doesn't like that she tried to set him up and set his boys up for an ambush by America's team. Tully gives Dusty a point for doing something he never thought he'd do, sneak up on them like a pack of dogs. Tully says that whilst they might have gone up, got one up on them this week, Arn doesn't have a broken leg, and whilst Arn might have a bruise, they still have the gold. Arn says Dusty's frustrated because they have what he wants. They have the belts, they have the income and the prestige that comes with being champions, and now Dusty is at the bottom of the pile. Arn closes out by saying that they're in better shape, they're better athletes, and they have the ace in the hole, JJ Dillon, which means they have the edge that will always push them over the top. So a lot to take in there. You've got guys that are the Dusty, Arn, JJ, Tully, every single one of them at the top of their game. Give Baby Doll her due as well. She did play a part in sort of nudging this over. But yeah, absolutely excellent stuff. So three segments to take in there. I'll fire it over to Shiv first of all, just for your thoughts on them.
Oh man, I'm gonna hit these in order. First off, Dusty should apologize for stripping nude. No one wants to see that, Big Dust. You know, one of the issues is like Dusty saying like they're running around with his title. It's like, well, he lost to Tully and he never defended the TV title. So I'm like fully in the Horseman side on this. I do like how like he threatens Rick, so he keeps all three of these like issues pretty hot. And it did make me laugh how he's like then gets back. He closes out the segment with saying if he has to get buck naked, he's gonna win. Tully alluding to saying they have expensive habits. I wrote in parentheses, does that mean a coke problem?
Yes.
Yeah, especially back then. And I even had that JJ was doing his Flair impersonation, Callum, so it's a little concerning how close we are already.
We're so in sync tonight.
I will say Arn did get a good line on Baby Doll. He said Baby Doll will do anything to get a man to hug her, which I was like, wow. That's cold-blooded. I did enjoy like the America's team going off against Tully and Arn with them saying with everything, just like the belly to belly. And I thought they were doing an angle where they broke Arn's leg because that's what it seemed like. But come to find out, that wasn't the case. And actually, Tully actually giving Dusty and TA his the props, and they got one over him, says they can't face them man to man. And I love how he called Dusty and TA second class citizens because they don't, just because they're not as good as them. And and I missed one more. Arn said that Tully and him should be the number one seed. Arn, you 100% right. Y'all are a great tag team. Just do whatever you need to do. But yeah, it was hot. And it's definitely, hopefully we see some matches between these four at some time because the crowd was going crazy with all that. And I just think Tully and TA have such great chemistry. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, completely agree. It would be nice that, because as everyone knows, we do dive into the house shows at some point. There must be some fan cam footage somewhere of Arn and Tully against America's team somewhere. So if there is, we will likely bring it. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, Sean, when you're listening. But yeah, we'll need to try and get that because I think we're all salivating over that. Dr. G, what are your thoughts on that? Because again, a lot to take in. So give us your thoughts on what went down with this one.
Scott summed it up really, really well. I mean, first of all, nobody wants to see Dusty buck naked. Sorry, Dust. Tully and Arn, the whole thing with Baby Doll. I mean, just everything was just so executed so well. And just Arn and Tully, you could see the formation of how they're going to be such a great tag team. They're just in sync, even when they're on the mic together. You know, they totally work well and feed off each other very well. You know, JJ, you know, JJ did a pretty good job here too. I mean, he was really spazzing out. Like, you know, he did remind me of Ric Flair a little bit. Poor man's version of Ric Flair, I should say, but still did a pretty good job, nonetheless. But I think I didn't realize this storyline with Baby Doll and all this went on this long. You know, it's amazing. Maybe just because we're breaking it down so much, but Dusty, it's funny because he was my favorite, like I said, growing up. But sometimes it just seems like he just rambles on and comes up with all these things like, yeah, I'm going to go out bucking. And like, I'm not saying I disliked it. It just was weird. Like, what? Sometimes, like, some of his promos are almost heelish at times.
I agree. Yeah. And like, I don't know if that was a product of the time, because we, like, you know, Justin and Scott had talked about this when doing 80s WWF. Like, Hogan was the same way. Hogan came off heelish in a bunch of these promos, but the fans still cheered them. And it just seems like Dusty's sort of stealing from the same playbook here.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, don't get me wrong, he's entertaining. He could speak. Don't get me wrong. It's just sometimes it just seems like, okay, where are you going with this, Dust? You know, it's like, but he, again, like you said, he was involved in so many storylines between all the territories he was in. He's the booker, that sometimes I think he just went out there and just rambled on, because Lord knows he probably, his head was filled with so much information, he probably didn't know what the heck to say half the time. Because I mean, he really, I mean, he didn't always put himself over per se, like, you know, he wasn't the world champion all the time, but boy, he definitely made sure he got his time in no matter what. Even if he wasn't saying anything, he still was gonna talk.
Yeah, and as you say, sometimes it's just it just says whatever comes into his mind.
Yeah, you know, I never thought I would be, and like I said, he was my first favorite wrestler growing up. I never thought I'd be this critical of Dusty, but now that I'm breaking things down, I'm like, well, you know, because you hear so much about how he was as a booker, and I think for the most part he did a pretty good job as a booker, but there were times, yeah, he it's very hard when you're a talent and you're booking at the same time, because listen, that's natural for a human. You're going to want to put yourself over at times because you could do it. And when he could.
Yeah. And I mean, we've been doing this for we've been doing this podcast now for almost 2 years, which is quite scary to think of in itself. And I think that's one of the things we've spoken about a lot, is that Dusty, for how excellent he is, he does come across, he comes across as the heel in it. Like, you could have a whole Am I the Asshole thread about Dusty Rhodes, but yeah, it doesn't come back. I think we can all agree it doesn't take away from how good everything else was. So yeah, excellent stuff as has now become expected of these guys. So we close out March 14th with a present from Sean directly to myself as a sick way of thanking me for taking the reins for this episode, as Jimmy Garvin is at the table with Tony to discuss one Wahoo McDaniel. Garvin opens up by saying that it should be legal for two people as good looking as he and Precious to be walking around. He asks politely if the fans could not smoke when he's in the ring because it gets in his hair, which is the only head of hair insured by Lloyd's of London, which I think is an excellent line. Now down to business, he says, and he is disappointed. He was expecting to come on to the Superstation to find Wahoo, but he's not there. He asks Tony what weighs 300 pounds, doesn't have a lot of hair, has bad breath and is invisible. To which Precious proudly tells him it's Wahoo McDaniel. Garvin tells us that he sent Wahoo a plane ticket to meet him there, but Wahoo sent it back with $1,000 and a note to say please leave me alone. But Tony cuts to a video response from Wahoo, which gives highlights of some of his matches, including the infamous Ric Flair match, showing off his vast arsenal of body slams, tomahawk chops, Irish whips, body slams and tomahawk chops. although a young Rick Rude can be seen in a few of the clips. Garvin picks up Wahoo, says he's not scared of Wahoo, and beating him will be a piece of cake, and he's not afraid of him. Garvin finishes off by warning him that his days are numbered. An inoffensive segment which gets Garvin over as the new cocky heel in the block, and it lacked Wahoo, so it's not all bad. I did find it very strange that we had a video response from Wahoo, and all it was just a highlight package, and no actual Wahoo responding. But there you go. It is 1986. I suppose we can't rely on technology as much as we do there, as much as we do today. But yeah, fine enough segment. Dr. G, what are your thoughts?
I was thinking of you, Callum, when I was watching this. I'm like, what is this shit? It was weird. Like, when he said, oh, we're going to hear a response from Wahoo, and then just showing, like, video replays. And a lot of that was in Florida, some of that footage. But I didn't totally get it, I guess. I don't know. I just didn't really seem like, I mean, Jimmy Garvin's great on the mic, but I just, like, when you hear that you're going to get a response, you think that you're going to get like an interview with Wahoo, you know, like, you know, with the mic, you know, just kind of saying, I'm going to kick your ass kind of thing. Or, I mean, like, do we really have to give a video package of Wahoo McDaniel? I mean, he's been around for, you know, off and on for so many years. I don't know. Just seemed weird to me. I don't know. Did everybody think that, or was I'm the only one that?
No, I definitely thought that as well. Even they could have even put something in, because they've not done it before, where he's like sent a video from Florida, and he's basically doing the interview like almost after a show,
right?
In Florida, I thought it was going to be something like that, or like the PWI sit downs that we've loved. But no, it was no. I agree with you completely. It was very strange. Scott, what did you think about it?
I expected like some type of voiceover, maybe him threatening Jimmy Garvin, but it was just like, you know, chanting and Wahoo just doing the same three moves, it felt like. But I think Jimmy's a good heel, where he's telling everyone not to smoke, which that's also a product of the times, because you should be able to smoke inside. Now people be like, what the hell are you doing? I did love him, Jimmy, saying his hair is insured by the Lloyds of London. I like him. He's such just like a smarmy heel, which is funny because the only other time I'd seen him before this was in the Rock and not the Rock and Roll Express.
Freebirds.
Yeah, the Freebirds in the early 90s. I can't believe I had a brain fart on that. But Jimmy Lynn says he's not scared of Wahoo, which if I was Jimmy Garvin, I wouldn't be scared of Wahoo either from that video, because it's like, this man didn't even threaten me or anything. So it's like, all right, well, we can try this, but, you know, I'm probably going to beat you, old man. But it seems like they're still hyping this up, which I thought this would be a dead issue, because we've seen some things like come and go. But I guess we're going to have Wahoo coming to either say something to Precious or Jimmy.
And as you can imagine, I am overcome with excitement of that prospect. I wonder if you're talking about you remember him from the early 90s Freebirds. I wonder if obviously, if you see Jimmy Garvin now, he doesn't have that hair anymore. He doesn't have any hair anymore.
I know, he's bald. It's crazy. Yeah. Like, because I saw him at the Hall of Fame the one year I went, and I was like, wow, that's crazy that he's like, because, you know, Michael Hayes is still Michael Hayes. Michael Hayes still thinks it's 1987. But like Jimmy Garvin, I was like, that if they had like the Chronon right there that said the Chiron that said his name, I would have never guessed that was Jimmy Garvin. But it seems he's moved on and Michael hasn't.
Yes, in more ways than one. Yeah, but I'm just thinking here, does he get an insurance payout if he was to lose like a loser leaves, or like a hair versus hair match and somebody cuts it off? Does he get a payout because Mother Nature is taking his hair from him? I think we should maybe write. Does he have a Twitter? I think we should maybe get Sean to ask him on Twitter.
I agree. I'm gonna look him up real quick to see if he has a Twitter.
So
because that might be why, like, his hair started falling out and he collected that at Lloyd's of London.
Well, it could be, because he just disappeared after the Freebirds run in the early 90s. That was him, gone. So that could be it. Living off Lloyd's of London, like many a great wrestler has done over the years. So whilst Scott is doing the investigatory journalism that we are renowned for. Oh, yeah. There you go.
So he does have a Twitter. He does have a Twitter. He's following zero people. He has 42 followers. It's not a confirmed account. His last tweet was from 1/28/2020.
Did he make it through the pandemic? Please make it. Please say he made it through the pandemic.
I mean, we haven't heard anything, so I'm hoping so. And here's his only tweet one of his only tweets that shows up for me is him and Steve Regal, aka Mr. Electricity, having a conversation, and it's so odd.
Former AWA tag team champions, as we found out on this very pod, they beat the Road Warriors.
Yeah, and he actually did say that I guess he was a pilot with Midway Airlines and US Air, and he's still with Precious. They spent 50 years together in 2020, so it's up to 52. Wow. So we'll hopefully they're still around. If I would love to have Jimmy Jam on the pod. Since Sean's meeting the bigwigs in Alabama, we should be able to turn this around pretty quick.
Oh, definitely.
Well, I think so. So, as we move on, and we hope the best for Jimmy Jam, won't be the last of Jimmy Jam on the pod, maybe for this episode, but certainly not the pod overall. We go to the following week, March 22nd, Saturday night, and we start off with the Rock and Roll Express coming out to the podium. They come out to the huge reaction, as is customary for the Rock and Roll Express, and they say that they are happy to be seeded in the upcoming Crockett Cup tournament, and warn the Midnight Express that they might not be the champions by the time the show comes around. Ricky then moves on to Ric Flair, who says, comes out time and time again, putting down the Rock and Roll Express, but he says the only reason Flair has loads of women is to keep him company whilst he falls asleep. Okay. And as if he's anything to say about them, say it to their faces, and it's not nice, and not to the nice people of the audience before he scoots off. A quick straightforward promo covering a lot of bases. They were only at the podium for a minute and a half, 2 minutes, but they hyped up the Crockett Cup tournament without taking away from the ongoing feud with the Midnight Express, and they got their licks in and Ricky got his licks in to Ric Flair as well. So the short, sharp, and to the point, I think. Scott, what were your thoughts on it?
The crowd was so loud, I couldn't even hear the start of the promo. Like, that's how much, but I'm pretty sure it was just the teeny boppers, as Ric Flair would say, that are loving some Rock and Roll Express. Ricky, not the best promo, so, like, I'm not shocked at him saying some things. Like, the only way Ric needs women is to help him go to sleep. It's like, not sure where we're going with that, buddy. But, you know, he does say if Ric has anything to say it to his face. And we're definitely seeing, you know, this is like one thing I also loved about Crockett in this era was like everyone had feuds with like three other people. It's not just contained to me and Dr. G having a feud. Like, it would be me, Dr. G, and Callum all having like a feud at different points, but Callum and Dr. G not having a feud. I just really enjoyed that. But yeah, it's just crazy how over Rock and Roll Express is. I'd always heard the jokes, but it's just insane.
Yeah, it is absolutely ridiculous. You know who it is. It's one of these ones, you know who it is that's coming out before they even come out, because and not because of their music, it's just because of the reaction they always get. Dr. G, what are your thoughts on this quick interview?
You know, I totally agree with you, Scott. I love the fact how you can see a lot of these guys are in different feuds in the same company. It's one thing, like I was saying about Dusty being in other companies, but he was in a lot, you know, he was in a lot of feuds, period. But this was great. And you see the makings of, and I'll tell you this, if you talk to Ric Flair today, Ric Flair loved working with Ricky Morton. And he said they were just so over the Rock and Roll Express. And you're totally right. The crowd and, you know, the screeches when they came out was just unbelievable. They had just as much of you know, a crowd pop as the Road Warriors and Magnum TA and Dusty Rhodes, maybe in some occasions more. But Ricky wasn't really great. It's funny because I've seen him in interviews recently. He's actually better now than he was back then. But yeah, I didn't understand what that comment was. You know, he needs all the girls to help him fall. So I didn't really understand what he was trying to say there. Maybe it was an inside thing. I don't know. But, you know, just was one of those things, just setting up a feud in Crockett. Not, you know, they just did that, you know, just take a minute or two and there you go. Another feud has started.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with both of you there. And the line about him, about the girls, he needs the girls to watch him or sit with him whilst he goes to sleep. But it's another thing to your point earlier, Dr. G, that they just say things that come to their mind. Whereas now you get everything, a lot of the things scripted, and you hear that they get screeds and screeds of paper to do a 5-minute promo. These guys are basically told, you've got 2 minutes, go out, fill 2 minutes and talk about X, Y, and Z. And it comes out where you've got Dusty Rhodes threatening to strip off. You've got that line from Ricky Morton. If you remember a few episodes ago, Jimmy Garvin saying that he doesn't want to make love with Ric Flair, he wants to wrestle. It's like, we get the point. It's a sort of put down, but they've obviously just been thrown out in front of the camera and think of it on the fly. Sometimes it hits, sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, a good promo to keep things ticking along and heating things up as we move forward. There is a lot of that you come to see there's a lot of promos on this one that just get things kick-started. And the next one we'll talk about is Paul Jones coming out to the podium to talk to Tony. Although Tony does start, it talks about how Jim Crockett Promotions is the home of all the big stars in wrestling, and with no hint of iron, does bring out number one Paul Jones and his army. Paul Jones, by the way, is starting to rock an absolutely excellent moustache. So expect lots of notes on Paul Jones' moustache as the weeks and months go on. Jones is out with Baron Von Raschke and an interesting looking individual named Taiho Kan. I believe is how you would pronounce it, and says that his army is going to grow so much that one day he will leave the building and it will take an hour for all of his army to follow him out of there because there'll be so many of them, which I got a wee chuckle at. I thought that was pretty good. He says that 1986 will be the year that his army takes out Jimmy Valiant, to which I say I hope so because he's been trying to do it for the past 2 years, and he promises a big surprise for Jimmy Valiant. He gets his 2 cents in about the Crockett Cup as well before heading off. So again, short, sharp, and to the point. Although it does sound as if the Jones and Valiant feud is going to kick on a good bit into 1986, which is really is a joy to behold. But not inoffensive stuff from my point of view. Dr. G, what were you thinking?
Well, it's funny because you know, Paul Jones' army. It's just always, he just seemed like he just threw all these guys together. So now you got T. Joe Kahn in there. You got you know, Baron Von Raschke, the Barbarian. It's like it's just these mid card guys that they don't really have. You know, they're not great on the mic. So let's put them with Paul Jones. That's just the way his army was. But it's just so funny. Like his main thing is to take out Jimmy Valiant, not, oh, we want to be, you know, tag team champions, or we want to be the world champion. Now we just want to have my army to take out one guy, Jimmy Valiant. I just think I think it's amusing if you think about it, especially how much we get on Jimmy Valiant all the time. But again, like you said, nothing offensive, just kind of another thing just to introduce some guys, you know, just let you know, hey, that our feud with Jimmy Valiant's still happening. And you know, and then, you know, just go from there.
Yeah, Ric Flair and J.J. Dillon and all these guys are pulled together for one thing, to get all the gold. And Paul Jones is looking around the locker room going, you look a bit weird. Come and join my army to try and take out Jimmy Valiant, which I've been trying to do for 2 years. yeah, very, very strange. But yeah, I agree with everything you've said there. Scott, what are you thinking about this one?
Yeah, his army sucks. If they can't even get in the tag team tournament, he says he'll take over if he wants. It's like, well, yeah, you have to. You have, you know, you're supposedly going to have like this huge army, and you, I mean, when your ring bearers are Baron Von Raschke and Tejo Khan, I mean, you're a little. I'm pretty sure we could run them. Us three could take out both of them guys. But you know, when I first saw this promo, I was thinking that it was like, oh, ho-hum promo, but it definitely sets the stage for what we'll see in our next episode. So it's nice little planting of breadcrumbs there.
Nice planting of breadcrumbs by Jim Cock Promotions and Scott Shiflett for the next episode of NWA Crock and Roll. So thank you for that, Scott. Sean will be proud.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we go on, again, planting seeds and just kicking everything or bringing everything, heating everything up, I should say. We move on again. Ric Flair is now out at the podium. he starts off in typical Flair fashion by asking for a moment's silence for all of the college co-eds on spring break who happened to rendezvous with Ric Flair when he was in Florida over the weekend.
Oh, that's 100% true. That's absolutely just 100% true.
Yeah. I mean, there's no ifs, buts, or maybes about that. All these co-eds apparently woke up the next morning wondering if there is life after Ric Flair. To be honest, I'm glad he did ask to add the last part of that, because at the start it did sound a bit snookish, if you ask me. If you know, you know. He turns his attention to Ronnie Garvin and says that what makes him the best is that he thrives on facing the greatest competition in wrestling. And when you come out, when you see him come out in his $2,000 suit, you know you're looking at the best. He says that Garvin might be a bad apple, but Flair is just that bit badder. It doesn't matter where it is. If it's in a cage, he will beat him within an inch of his life and keep his baby next to him. Said baby being the title and not David. He makes a big deal of stepping out of the tournament and the chance to win $1 million to defend the title against Dusty. He says that he's agreed to the match on one condition, that if Flair beats Dusty at the Crockett Cup, Dusty Rhodes will not get another shot at the World Heavyweight Championship. Flair ends the promo with another shot at Ricky Morton and his teeny bopper fans before styling and profiling his way off the set. Another great Flair promo for me. Again, just the next in a long line of excellent promos. As we were saying earlier on, two or three feuds happening at the one time, but they all get their place in the promo, and we do have the major stipulation added to the Crockett Cup title match. So, nothing to complain about on this one. Scott, do you have any complaints?
Flair is just a master promo. Like him talking about with him saying that all the college girls are wondering if there's life after Flair was just awesome, and I loved how, you know, he tells Dusty, he says, "This is your last shot while I'm champion." I love that stipulation in wrestling. You know, it usually means they're going to win 95% of the time, but there's also that 5% where they lose, and it's like you got to wait till someone beats them, and it's just great. It's a feud ender, in my opinion.
Oh, definitely, because we've seen a lot of Flair and Dusty, and we've seen Flair beat Dusty and Dusty beat Flair. To your point, that's a nice, could be the nice full stop on this one. And Dusty's got to wait, as you said, until Flair loses the belt. And Flair's, apart from a couple of days around Starrcade, Flair's had it since we started this podcast. So yeah, totally agree with you there. Dr. G, what are your thoughts on it?
You know me, I love listening to Ric Flair. I mean, he's just totally on all the time, and he's just so egomaniacal about himself, it just gets him over. But he's just one of those guys. He was that cool heel even back then, you know, before it was how it is today. Where he still had his got people that cheered for him no matter what, just because they just loved listening to him speak. And then, you know, what are the college girls going to do after Ric Flair? How are they going to move on? You know, like just totally good stuff. And the stipulation
with Dusty not getting another title shot, it's good. I mean, you know, in wrestling, if they could stick to what they actually, the stipulations, yes, Scott, in theory, I agree with you. It's a nice way to end a feud, but unfortunately, they, you know how it is in wrestling. It's like, oh, everybody doesn't have a memory. Let's, you know, they should give us more credit than that. But another great Ric Flair promo. Nothing. I don't think we'll ever say that he did a bad promo, to be honest.
No, I am. And if there ever is that time, something's gone horribly, horribly wrong. But yeah, just you when you see Flair up at that podium with Tony, you know magic's going to happen. Unfortunately, in my opinion anyway, same might not be able to be said about the next bit. We move on to Tony again at the podium, and he bigs up and introduces Joe Nighthawk Coltrane, who's joining Jim Crockett Promotions. He says that Coltrane is a former serviceman and a super athlete from East Tennessee State, and is apparently one of the top pro wrestlers in the world with a very impressive background. So impressive that he has nothing on Cage Match prior to this. Nighthawk cuts your typical respectful Jim Crockett Promotions full of great athletes. I'm very proud to be here promo before being interrupted by Jim Cornette just as he began to ramble. James E complains that he was waiting to come out and talk about how good the Midnight Express are, but his time has been taken up by Joe College, who nobody wants to hear from. Coltrane apologises to Tony, saying that he's new around here. He thought this was his interview time and walks off, much to the delight of Cornette, who seemingly outsmarted him. Cornette just leaves, but he comes back out later on for another promo, interrupting Tony's birthday and anniversary announcements by wishing the Road Warriors a happy 10-year anniversary on graduating the 6th grade for the 8th time. Just wonderful. Jim rounds off all the teams that the Midnight Express are better than before Nighthawk comes back out, again explaining that he's new around here, but that he now thinks he knows what's going on. He threatens Cornette not to interrupt his television time again, and Cornette is seemingly about to fill his pants when the Midnight Express come out to back him up, and then switches back to good old cocky Cornette. Rock and Roll Express come out to even the odds, and the bad guys walk off. Not sure this is necessarily the best way to introduce your new signing, by making him look like an absolute idiot in his first interview, but it is what it is. This seems to have done more for Cornette and the Midnight Express Rock and Rolls feud than it does for your new signing, because it does look like a complete putz. But never mind. It does again. Adds a wee bit to the, like, it keeps the Midnight Express and Rock and Roll feud at the front of everyone's mind, so can't complain too much about that. Dr. G, what did you think about this one?
I don't even remember this guy being introduced. Did he even have? I'm wondering if he even has any matches. I do not remember this guy at all, and I have a pretty good memory for this stuff.
I did look.
I mean, first of all, he looks so uncomfortable. Cornette, like you said, and then granted, he's the heel and he's going to try to make somebody look bad, but it was just very awkward. Is that maybe the best word? It was like, it was uncomfortable. Like, it was like, where were they going with it? Like, I guess I didn't know where the heck they were going with it in the end.
Yeah. I
mean, you're going to introduce a new guy. You don't do it like that. You obviously don't have big things for him in store for him.
No, I did look it up. I can only see, I've got it back up again here. I can only see that he had, again, going by Cage Match, which might not be 100% accurate, but they've only got 9 matches of his from Mid Atlantic between March and May. Doesn't look as if he even makes it past May.
I kind of remember the name, but I just don't remember this, you know, introduction. And honestly, there's really nothing much memorable for it. I mean, Jim Cornette just did his master talk and made him look like a fool, and basically that's it.
Yeah. Not yet. And I mean, if you don't, there was nothing memorable. I'm not surprised that you don't remember anything, because if the rest of his time with Jim Crockett Promotions is the same as his introduction, then yeah, not exactly memorable. Scott, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I've just been trying to look him up too, and I can't find anything. And it definitely seemed like they were just making him out to be a joke, because Cornette comes, like, runs him off, and then Cornette just says nothing, and then it just ends awkwardly. It's like, what the hell's going on? I will say, like, you know, then Coltrane comes out second time with him. It's like, we don't like you. And then I did like, you know, Rock and Roll Express coming. That gives him a little bit of the rub, but it looks like it was all for nothing. Like, I'm trying to Google this guy, and I can't really find anything out about him. When I type in Nighthawk Coltrane and then do Joe Coltrane, it's like, brings up a saxophone guy. I don't think this is the same person. But it's, I don't know. This was like a misstep for Crockett right here. I think they were like thinking, oh, Cornette can save anything. And he just made me think, like, what the hell's going on the whole time I'm watching these two segments.
Yeah, it was very strange. I mean, just now we've got the what's his name? Veer is coming, and he's been coming to Raw for about 3 months now. That's a better way of introducing, because at least the guy's now a meme and he's memorable. That's a better way of introducing somebody than Jim Crockett have done for this guy. The guy's just got off to it. If it was going to be something special, they've completely ruined it straight away, because he's just, as you said, he's just a joke and a bit of an afterthought already, and he's only been in there for one night. So unfortunate, but it is what it is. You can't win them all. Not everyone's going to be Ric Flair or Arn Anderson. The last bit from, or the last couple of the segments that we'll talk about on this episode of Saturday Night surrounds Magnum and Nikita and their ongoing feud. Obviously my favourite feud, given the barnstorming matches that they've been having so far. Go back to the last couple of episodes if you want to hear my thoughts on them. Tony introduces Magnum TA and Wahoo McDaniel to the podium, and who Wahoo has come armed with, of course, his trusty Indian strap. Apparently Dusty and Magnum asked them to complete their team to go up against the Horsemen. Magnum, completely lying through his teeth, says it's a pleasure to have Wahoo here and a pleasure to have him on their side. Magnum hypes Wahoo's skills before moving on to Nikita and says he wants him in the ring. And if Nikita wants a Russian chain match, then so be it. So a quick one there from Magnum. Russians are out later on with Tony, and they still have the six-man tag team trophy. Despite Crusher Khrushchev obviously being on the shelf at the moment, Tony announces that they will be in the Crockett Cup as well. Ivan says it's about time that Magnum agrees to sign the contract for the Russian chain match, and it's with the Kremlin just now for final preparations. And again, that's just another small touch that I'm loving. They've got their own lawyers back in Moscow, just making sure everything's fine. The Superdome and the Crockett Cup will be Magnum's first test, and if he passes that, the next test will be the Russian chain match. Nikita takes over chain in hand and talks about the dangers of the chain match. Ivan says it's destiny that Nikita becomes US champion before he turns their attention to the Road Warriors. He says that all the talk is about the Crockett Cup, but mentions that all the towns and cities that the Russians and Road Warriors will have to face each other, and says the Road Warriors will be eliminated before the tournament even starts. These couple of segments move on the Magnum and Nikita feud. Even though it's a bit bizarre to me that America's team, who have been aligned with almost every face on the roster, and have been saved previously by the likes of Sam Houston and Manny Fernandez, they have made the call to Wahoo. We've not seen Manny Fernandez pretty much at all since Starrcade. But you bring in Wahoo. Must obviously be, I imagine it's just to give him something to do whilst he's not with Garvin, but I'd have preferred Manny in it. But other than that, I think two again, decent enough promos. And again, just going back to what we were talking about earlier, everyone's not got one thing to do. They've got two, three things to going on at the same time. So yeah, keeps all them ticking along as well. So I'll go to Scott first for your thoughts.
It's crazy seeing TA hype up Wahoo, because if memory serves, we've seen them have a have some matches together in the past couple of months. So it's nice, like, you know, he's like, and Wahoo even says, like, you've earned my respect. So it's nice to, like, bring that up. It's like, yeah, we've had issues in the past, but we're going to fight these horsemen together. And I love how TA, like, when he starts talking about Nikita, he's already intense man as it is, but, like, he switches to, like, another gear here. And, like, he's tired of talking, wants to wrestle. And he's like, I'll do it in a Russian chain match. Then we see the Russians, and Nikita's just saying he'll choke him out with the chain, which, you know, I'm sure, like Dr. G has said before, I thought he was speaking, like, Russian, but it's, like, just broken English as him and Ivan are, like, talking about the Kremlin and stuff. And I love how they say, like, we can't wait to fight the Road Warriors in the cage in Richmond, Virginia, and Spokane, Washington. All right, Cal, little geography lesson for you. Richmond is on the East Coast. Richmond, Virginia is on the East Coast. Spokane, Washington is on the West Coast. That's some frequent flyer miles that these guys are getting for this tour. Complete opposite ends of the country here. I'm not sure how, you know, how you are with American geography, but I just want to let you know they're not close to each other. So that's like a hell of a tour they're going on. But I like how they do that. It's like, we're going to fight you in Richmond, and then we're going to fight you in Spokane. That's when, because this is when the companies were not making money like WWE is and AEW with their TV rights. They were making money at the house shows. So it's like, if you want to see these matches, it's going to have to be here. And it's just like the perfect thing. And this is how we get these fan cam footage, which we'll see with the next episode as well.
Yeah, I knew that. My geography is not even the best. Like, my Scottish geography is not the best. So thank you for giving me the heads up. I knew that Spokane. I know that Washington is like the northwest, but ask me to point where Virginia is on a map, and I've got no idea. So thank you for that.
No problem. I wasn't trying to be condescending. I was just saying, like, these are so weird that they're talking about these matches and they're on opposite sides of the country.
Oh, no, not condescending at all. No, I was actually surprised when they talked about Spokane, because I'm thinking that's not really Crockett territory, but I suppose they were on the superstation at that point. So obviously they might get it out there. So thank you. Like, every day is a school day. Dr. G, what are your thoughts on these couple of interviews?
Scott, I think, you know, at that time, if you notice, they do try to throw in towns because those are the towns that they may run in. And, you know, hearing it on the national television, almost kind of like a little plug about, hey, we're going to be in your town. You know, we cover it all. They were trying to become more, look like they were more national, kind of like the WWF. So that's probably why they did it. All the interviews were good. I mean, Nikita, it's so funny because now we laugh at his accent, especially that we interviewed him and we know how he really speaks, that to think that we actually thought that he was Russian is actually kind of funny. You know, back then, Wahoo Magnum, it was interesting that they at least acknowledged that they did feud at one time, and, you know, now Wahoo is going to help him, but Wahoo is just not good on the stick at all. I guess I'm trying to figure out why he was so popular. I mean, I guess he was, maybe he had some pretty good matches. He was just a tough guy, but he was, when he was a face in the various territories, he was always very over. But, yeah, listen, we don't get why people love Jimmy Valiant either. So now Wahoo, I probably soured on more as I've watched things compared to what I used to think of him, which is kind of funny. But no, good. You know, some decent promos, just setting things up. Nothing offensive there.
Yeah, I think with him, I think with Wahoo, we've only been, obviously we're in March of. This is actually hitting our 12, like month 12 of actual timeline stuff. So there must have been a lot of Valiant stuff and Wahoo stuff that we've not seen. That is why they're so popular. Although Matt Souza might disagree with Valiant after watching, was it Jay Strongbow he faced at that Madison Square Garden one that Sean made us watching? That was horrific. But we'll agree with both of you on everything you said. Nice, moves everything nicely along. And we finish off this episode of the pod with our Crockett Cup team spotlight. And this one actually comes from Mid-South. It is Ted DiBiase and Steve Williams against the Sheepherders. DiBiase and Williams are the current Mid-South Tag Team Champions and are the number 10 seed for the tournament. And the Sheepherders are obviously the artist soon to be named the Bushwhackers. Doc and DiBiase are out to the 1980s staple of Born in the USA, and Bruce Springsteen must have made an absolute fortune of all of the territory videos on YouTube, because there must at least be at least one instance of Born in the USA being used at this point in time. I don't know if you guys noticed, but the ring apron actually had an advert for the Crockett Cup on it, given that the tournament's going to be held in Mid-South territory. DiBiase looking a lot better and a lot healthier than the last time we saw him on the pod, where he took on Flair and bled a gusher that I believe legitimately he needed a blood transfusion for. If he didn't, that genuinely shocks me. Bit of a stop start at the beginning, before Doc and Butch finally get into it, but there is very little finesse in this one. And the crowd are eating up every single bit of it. DiBiase gets the hot tag and cleans house, but then a bit of miscommunication almost derails them. Don't know if you guys noticed, but it looked as if DiBiase was going to go up for a drop kick at one point. But whilst he is in the air, he realises it's not going to happen. Lands on his feet and transitions right into a headlock. Which didn't look as awkward as it sounds. Very smooth transition, which I thought was sort of very, very impressive. Just shows you how good DiBiase actually was. Jack Victory gets on the apron with a New Zealand flag, which distracts the referee, and all hell breaks loose. DiBiase looks to have it won with the figure four, but Luke comes off the top with the flag onto DiBiase's chest, and Butch covers for the 1-2-3 and to win the match and the Mid-South Tag Team Championship. Both the teams were scheduled to win the tournament, as we said, but unfortunately DiBiase gets injured before the tournament and is replaced by the man that personality forgot, Terry Taylor, to complete Team Mid-South. I thought this was a really, really fine TV match. Some big names involved, and always good to see sort of Sheepherder era Bushwhackers and not proper WWF Bushwhackers. I went 2.25 on it. I think that's probably just down to the sort of slowish start you got on it, but it was a fine match, and I can't really make any complaints about it. Dr. G, what are your thoughts?
I went 2.5 stars on it. It was a good TV match. I mean, yeah, you know, UWF was just starting to get started. Did you hear in there like Jim Ross saying like, oh, we didn't get the new belt yet, because I guess I don't know. It was the Mid-South belts, like we didn't get the new championship. It's just these are the things again why these companies struggled against WWF. It just sometimes just seems so low rent. If you're going to be the Universal Wrestling Federation, why didn't you change all the titles right off the top? Instead of calling it Mid-South this, Mid-South that, if you're trying to get away from it, you know, they're now they got a lot of syndication around the country. People don't care about the Mid-South championships. They want to hear, you know, Universal, you know, Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. I just picked up on that. It's just, again, some of the things why the WWF just reigned supreme during this time. It's so funny because when you see the Sheepherders as compared to when they were the Bushwhackers, it's like two totally different teams. Like you said, it was a pretty good match. DiBiase is just, you know, you could tell he's great in the ring. Terry Taylor replacing him right there. Oh, well, you know, what are you going to do? it was a decent match, decent TV match, 2.5 stars, nothing, you know. Nothing too great, but nothing horrible. Average.
Yeah, I think that's fair. There's nothing. It wasn't the best match we've seen. It certainly wasn't the worst match we've seen. So I think middle of the road is probably
the crowd was, which kind of sometimes will help make a match a little bit.
Oh yeah, definitely. If there's a good crowd, it'll make a bad match bearable. I think a lot of the time. Scott, what are your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this match, guys. Seeing Ted DiBiase as a babyface is something new to me, because I just think of him as the Million Dollar Man. Besides, like when he was like the face manager of the Steiner Brothers in the late 1990s, and also seeing the Sheep Herders as the Sheep Herders and not the Bushwhackers, because I've heard they're pretty nasty as the Sheep Herders. So that was sweet. And I really thought, I didn't realize that was Jack Victory. I thought that was Johnny Ace, because I'm pretty sure Johnny Ace is the wrestler that does it in when they're in Crockett and at WCW later on. And just seeing Doc, like I'd always seen like great stuff about him, but seeing him as like a badass here was pretty awesome. Like these guys were going at it. The ending was kind of wonky with like the flag hit over, you know, on the base and the Sheep Herders win the tag titles. I was not expecting that because, like, you know, I thought they were getting ready for the Crockett Cup. It would make sense to have the Universal Champs, but the Sheep Herders are also in the Crockett Cup, so it's nice. I went 2.5 as well. I wish I could see more of this. Made me want to go actually look for more UWF and Mid-South on Peacock just off of how hot this match was, because I've always heard good things about it, and I was shocked at how much I liked it, because normally when I have to watch this stuff, I'm like, I'm just taking lazily notes as I'm watching. But I was like tuned in the whole time. That like I don't have that many notes because I was so glued to the TV. I had to go back and watch it a second time.
Yeah, I find that when I'm not doing these notes that. I say that normally because that's the first time I've done these notes. Normally, I can tell how good a match is by the amount of notes I've got. The more notes I've got, it's probably sarcastic comments I've got as opposed to anything to do with the match. But if there's a good, really good match, I'll have barely anything. So, it's nice to hear that somebody else uses the number of notes right star system.
Yes. It's concerning how in sync we are today, Callum. And I just started. So I just started full time with you guys in the past couple of months. So we're already in sync with that.
Oh, you've definitely hit the ground running. No complaints with any of the with any of your comments there. And I think we're all much of a muchness. I mean, I went 2.25. I easily convinced to go to 2.5 because it was a fine match. I've really enjoyed a lot of the Mid-South stuff that we've watched. Other than the Ric Flair Butch Reed promo, which was, I'm still shocked, wasn't on the wasn't cut out of the network version or the Peacock version, whatever streaming service you use. But a lot of it, a lot of the Mid-South stuff has been excellent that we've seen. And I do think there is a good bit on of Mid-South. I started doing a mini chrono watch during lockdown of Mid-South. I kind of fell away from it after a few episodes, but no, really, really impressed with everything I've seen. So I might do the same, Scott. I think I might get into a bit of Mid-South watching as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've only heard good stuff. I know, like, I'm sure there's some bad stuff there, but with like JYD, you know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, where he's not a joke. But you know, Butch Reed, it's definitely something I want to look into.
Yeah, the Butch Reed stuff we've watched has been really good. I think, you can back me up on that. Butch Reed's been a highlight, been a non-Crockett highlight of the pod for us, especially when we're doing the random watches during the Peacock transition. But no, all excellent stuff. So, yes, we hopefully can find some time to, in amongst the Arn Anderson Appreciation Pod, the Mike Jackson Appreciation Pod, we'll maybe try and fit in a Mid-South Appreciation Pod as well. But that wraps us up for this episode of NWA Crock and Roll. We won't be doing the awards this time, as usual when we do batches of two. The awards will come at the end of the second episode, which will be coming to you in a couple of weeks' time. We'll cover, we actually only cover one day in the next episode, March 29th, where we have an episode of Mid-Atlantic, we have an episode of Saturday Night, and we have a Greensboro House show. So that's to come in a couple of weeks' time. So all that's left for us to do is just see what else is going on with you guys. So Dr. G, what have you got going on?
Well, as usual, we have the NWA Saturday special that I do with the Podfather, Scott Criscolo. It drops every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Sometimes, depending on our schedules, sometimes it winds up being the Sunday special. but for the most part, we try to stay on the Saturday schedule. And we break down the NWA USA shows and the NWA Power shows. And if that, when there's pay-per-views, we break that down. But the new NWA is, there's some exciting things. There's, some bumps in the road, with a small company trying to get off its feet. But we've been enjoying it, and we've been really getting some great response. So we thank you for listening, and we'll keep doing it. We're hitting on our 100th show soon. So wow. It's been a lot of fun, and hoping that it's kind of nice for me covering the new NWA and the old stuff. So it's been a lot of fun, and I could be reached if you want to hit me up on Twitter at Dr. GPTB.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And I didn't know the Saturday special was coming up for 100 episodes. That's even more impressive considering for about a year there was no NWA to speak of. So that's an amazing milestone you guys are about to reach with episode 100. You kept chugging along during the pandemic.
We thank you guys for coming on, because some of you guys came on a couple times and we did some shows kind of talking about like some of the old stuff just to kind of fill in. But thank you. It's been a lot of fun, and I can't believe it's reached that far already. And but now it's getting easier and easier now because the company is up and running, and it's going to be interesting to see what Billy Corrigan and the crew have on tap for this year.
Well, whatever they've got on tap, NWA Saturday special every Saturday morning is where you can find it. Not even a worldwide pandemic will stop that podcast coming out.
Definitely.
Scott, what have you got coming on?
You can catch me on PTB and YouTube Roulette with Sean Kidd, Logan Crossland, Matt Susan, Jambalaya, Jake Williams. It's basically like Mystery Science Theater 3000 meets wrestling, where we just commentate basically over some wrestling matches, and we do a ranking system. We've had some great matches, and we've had some horrible matches that we watch. That's always fun. Pop Goes to the Couch with Tim Capel, Sean Kidd, and Andy Atherton. We covered Boba Fett in full, and we also covered Cobra Kai this year, and Peacemaker. We've been real busy with that. We review all those. That's a lot of fun. You can catch me on PTB and Pedestal. That's like a round table where we have matches that are on a pedestal, and we have a ranking system and see if they deserve to be there, yes or no. The last episode I was on was the Nakamura-Sami Zayn match from the Dallas TakeOver. We discovered that was very close, but it's not pedestal worthy because of the lasting impact. But I can be found on Twitter at Scott_Shiflett, and thank you all for listening.
Thank you very much, Scott. So if you're on any, if you listen to the wrestling feed or the Pop Experience feed, and a podcast drops, there's a good chance Scott will be on it. Were you on the abomination of a podcast that said that War Games 92 was not on the pedestal?
I was not on that, Callum, so you can't put that on me.
I'm not. You're saved for this one.
I was just as shocked as you were when I listened to that and they said it wasn't worth the pedestal, so...
That was an eye opener. The last I am also for me I am also a contributor to PTN Pedestal. The last episode I was on was with Logan and Jake, and we gushed over Shawn Michaels and Triple H from SummerSlam 2002. You'll be shocked to hear that three Shawn Michaels marks kept that one firmly on the pedestal. Elsewhere, you can find me on the Special Relations podcast every month, where me, Ben and Rory talk about whatever comes to our mind in the days or so running up to the podcast. We like to keep it contemporary, but we also like to drop in some random inside baseball sort of type things that a lot of the time I think only the three of us get, but, you know, it's... We just talk about whatever comes to our mind, and we try and keep it on topic as best we can. We're getting better at it, but still not the best. Can also find my voice on a lot of the video stuff, the video content that we put out. You can find us on four different platforms, and again, I've not been clever enough to keep it all to the same username. So it is twitch.tv/placetobenation. On YouTube, if you search Place to Be Nation, all one word, you'll find the channel there. On Facebook, it is PTBN Live. And on Twitter, where you can also tweet your suggestions for the show and for anything you want video content-wise, is at PTBN YouTube. So that's the channels there. Every month, you'll tend to find, unless the WWE happen to kill the territory again, you'll have... monthly live watches of the WWE's premium live event. We've just done the Royal Rumble as we record this. We will be doing the 2-day Crockett Cup event for the NWA coming up as well. Likely going to do AEW Revolution. We did do one as well in the archives on YouTube. GCW, the world on GCW, with a few people doing that. Just a step into the unknown. So something for everyone on there, we hope. And you can just get our alternative commentary on that as well. But that is everything from the three of us. Thank you, gentlemen, for another great episode. Sean, you were missed. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks in a couple of episodes time after you come back from your assignment either to Australia or Alabama, depending on where you actually have been. We'll send out the search party. But thank you all very much for listening, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks for another excellent episode of NWA Crock and Roll.